that we are missing, Limpopo?
No. All things bright and beautiful, bro. I think we are the only ones who have locked in. Do you mind if we start the NEC of SAT right now? Because they will join us along the way.
All things bright and beautiful, the Lord made them all.
All things great and small.
DG, how are you, my brother? Well, how are you, leadership?
You have disrupted our NEC, SAT NEC on the platform. So we are going to demobilize.
The portfolio committee has disrupted my meeting with the 25 universities of South Africa. I'm sharing an symposium with the 25 universities of South Africa. We are at VES, Linda Auditorium.
No, you don't have life, DG.
Good morning, Honorable Morwa Chetla. Good morning, DG. Good morning, MECs. Good morning, members of the portfolio committee. I hope you are well.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Me too.
Good morning, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson. I'll disconnect and leave the meeting.
Please greet my Deputy Minister.
Good morning, Deputy Minister. Chairperson, I will hand over to you now. We have a quorum. Thank you.
So thank you very much. Let me greet you, DM. The MEC Eastern Cape, I'm not sure if the KZN one is in the meeting. Let me also greet the DG and the DBE, also the department from the provinces, and let's greet our members. Can you do the roll call, Llewellyn?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have yourself, Honorable Binka Zigaba, Honorable Morwane, Honorable Yabo, Honorable Lexie, Honorable Morwa Chetla. I have Honorable Nodada, Honorable Van Zyl, and Honorable Boshoff on the platform. I have one apology, and that is for Honorable Sukers, Chairperson, and then from the department. The apology from Minister, who is currently out of the country, and I do know that Deputy Minister has requested that she be allowed to leave us a bit earlier because she also has another commitment. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm still the member of the committee, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Honorable Mashabela. Just...
No, but also you can't have iPhones there and think you will be recognized.
Yeah, recognize yourself.
Exactly. Honorable Adwans is on study leave. So I think that apology might have missed you, Mr. Brown. Members, first, I think we are all happy that our Springboks have won. They have brought it home. They are bringing it home. They are landing now, I think, at 10 o'clock at OR. And I think many of South Africans will be there to welcome them, but also they will be around the country to celebrate their victory with South Africans. Few provinces have been identified, and it tells you where the money of this country is, because they are going to provinces where there's money of this country. But nonetheless, let also, I think, from my side, thank all the members that have participated in the Bella Bill debate last Thursday. Thank you very much for the debate. That, I think, in our view, was a very successful debate. We are going to be looking close to the processes of Bella Bill as they are in the National Council of Provinces. And well done to ourselves, at least for our part now, we have done. Through everything, we have managed to pull through. Thank you very much. And to all the members that were there to support physically, who did not really debate, but your support meant a lot to all of us. Can you fly the agenda, Llewellyn? Thank you very much. Today we are having the update on the status of the National School Nutrition Program. We are going to get a briefing from the department, the KwaZulu-Natal province, and the Eastern Cape province. And after that, we will, that's if we will have time, we would have to consider the minutes of the 24th of October. At this point, let me allow members to adopt the agenda. Principal.
Mudula Stulo. My name is Ronnie. My father's name is Moratseta. Good morning to yourself. And good morning to the leader, the DM leading Team Basic Education. Good morning to our two provinces, KZN and Eastern Cape. And good morning to my fellow colleagues, members of this portfolio committee. I rise to move that this agenda be adopted as is, and I rest my case.
Honorable Liam.
Morning, Chair. Is it allowed for the father and son to move for the adoption and second? If so,
as you wish. This was your house. As you wish.
Let me greet the chairperson and all honorable members on the platform, even those who have sent apologies. Maybe it's because of the debate last week, but greet the department led by the deputy minister, the DG, and the two provinces present here, and everybody else who may be watching from home. My name is Teboho Letsie, and I wish to second the adoption of the agenda as proposed by the only principal in Parliament. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, father and son. You are in charge. DM, let me allow you to lead with the political overview.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to you and greetings to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Greetings to the honorable MEC for KwaZulu-Natal and MEC for the province of Eastern Cape who are present in the meeting today. Greetings to the officials of Parliament as well as officials of the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Education in the two provinces. Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity that you have afforded us as the Department of Education, Basic Education in South Africa, to come and brief you on the status of the National School Nutrition Program, which is a program that makes our learners to run to school because it's part of the pro-poor policy of government that many of our peers will know, but you are younger than me, I know, but those who are my age, they know that many of our peers left school because there was nothing to eat at home. They had to go to the farms and work and support their siblings. So I want to thank the government of the Republic of South Africa for affording our learners the opportunity to come and eat. And when breakfast was introduced, Chair, it's amazing. Learners are running in the morning because breakfast is served at 7 o'clock. They are literally
running to get breakfast, whether they wanted to go to school or they want the breakfast. But the fact of the matter is the breakfast is taking them to school. We really appreciate. So, of course, feeding more than 9 million learners is not a child's play. It has its hiccups. Even now, I want to thank the department for being able to handle such a huge number, to serve them every day. So we are here today, coming from the first day of the examination, wherein majority of our learners were sitting for the exam paper yesterday. From where we are sitting, Chair, everything went well in all our 9 provinces. In all our 9 provinces. KwaZulu-Natal, I know the MEC might speak about this. They had a serious challenge last week of storm damage in the Mkanyakude area. But I want to thank the province. They did all what they can to make sure that there's no learner that is disadvantaged because of the natural disaster that happened. All learners are sitting for the examination, even in the Mkanyakude district. Even the schools were highly affected by the storms of last week. So today they are writing, teaching, correct me, economics or accounting. I don't remember. I didn't check my timetable. But they are writing one of the commercial subjects.
Economics, Deputy Minister.
Thank you so much, TG. They are writing economics. So not all learners are writing, but we want to thank even the portfolio committee for traveling this journey with us until we are here for the beginning of the academic year to date. We are all together in this. When you hold us accountable and you go and visit our provinces, you visit our schools, it tells that we are together in this. We are not saying your role is only to checkmate us, but to make sure that the children of South Africa get quality education. Thank you very much, all members of the portfolio committee, for this. Chair, I don't want to go to town. As I indicated, that I will be taking a flight at 11, but I will be here until 11. DG is addressing universities, is chairing that session with 25 universities. So he will just introduce, we allowed her from the side, him from the side of the department. And I believe, Chair, that he will also be exempted because the entire team is here. The TDG responsible for that responsibility is here, and senior management from the department are here. The provinces, the MECs and the HODs are here. So without the DG, I don't think that that can be a train smash, especially that he did come to show his face and show his commitment from leading the department administratively. So let me allow the DG to come in. Then, yeah, we'll take it from there. Thank you so much, Chair. DG.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable MEC Garde, and Honorable MEC Fraser. Deputy Minister, can I also indicate that the HOD of KZN is also from the administration leading the team. He might actually present, take the committee through the presentation of KZN. DDG Zwagadi from Eastern Cape is leading the Eastern Cape team in terms of the administration. Although Ms. Vetboy will be presenting, so Ms. Zwagadi is here. And also, I've seen DDG Wesley Hadebe from KZN in the meeting. So Dr. Whittle is the branch head that the Deputy Minister referred to, who's the head of social cohesion, where National School Nutrition
Recording program, in progress.
As part of the school health program is located. The manager responsible for NSNP MCDT, NEOCDT, main NEOCDT, will be doing our presentation. Deputy Minister, I assume that the sequence would be then that when KZN presents, then the MEC will come in and lead. The same applies to Eastern Cape, as it has been the established tradition in these meetings. As Deputy Minister indicated, I'm chairing the symposium with faculties, schools of universities from our public and private universities. We started at 9 o'clock. I started that meeting and indicated that I need to report to the Deputy Minister, to our portfolio committee, about this engagement. We usually meet beginning of the year and towards the end of the year to do things that you ask us to do. Issues of demand and supply. We also discuss issues that are related to reading, issues that are related to the 3-3 model, early childhood development, performance in maths and science, because they produce teachers for us. So I'm going to be requested, as the Deputy Minister requested, that I must then leave as soon as we start with our presentation. I'll find time to come back if I'm able to do so during question and comments time. If you allow me, Honorable Chairperson, then I will request Mrs. NEOCDT through Dr. Whittle to take the committee through the presentation that we prepared for the committee, if that that is fine with you, Honorable Chair. Should we proceed, Honorable Deputy Minister?
Yes, the presentation, we have been given the platform with us.
Thank you. Now, let's run. Dr. Whittle will come.
Good morning.
During questions and comments. Thank you.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, DG. And good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Deputy Minister. And I also want to greet all the members of the Portfolio Committee, the executives from provinces, MECs, as well as the HODs. And also good morning to colleagues, senior managers in the provinces, as well as at the DBE. As indicated, my name is NEOCDT. And I would like to ask Mr. Mahada if he can show the slide presentation. If ready. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mahada. Honorable members, this is a presentation whose outline reads as such. I will just give a brief background as well as the performance, provincial performance, or an update of the implementation of the National School Nutrition Program as at quarter two for Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And then I will also give a DBE oversight and monitoring as our key responsibility, and then conclude. This will be a very short presentation, and as the provincial management as well as provincial counterparts will be giving much more detail in terms of the implementation of the National Food Nutrition Program. So in terms of background, as we all know, KZN and Eastern Cape experienced non-feeding in quarter 1, 2023, due to identified inefficiencies that we have together diagnosed, or rather highlighted. We have therefore highlighted also that there were challenges, especially in KZN, in terms of supply chain management, and that is how we identified the challenges. And in Eastern Cape particularly, we also had challenges in terms of delayed transfer of funds to school. And that is just the identified challenges that we could diagnose at the time. Now, to mitigate that, As part of our key responsibility, the DBE undertook quite a number of engagements with our provincial counterparts. We had meetings with them. We also visited the province, and we also had meetings virtually, some of them. And we also tried to strengthen our monitoring, especially in schools that were affected, especially in KZN. In our table that I might not have included here is that we had actually more schools that we visited as the national department in that period in KZN so that we can make sure that we have real-time data, as well as having observed how the program is being implemented at the time and what are the challenges. And at the same time, we also supported the province as well as the district in making sure that we get the program to take its course and resume feeding. But we can safely say that as of now, the feeding has resumed at both provinces and that the program is fully operational. In terms of the provincial performance for quarter two, we have Eastern Cape that have introduced the breakfast program. This has been going on since the beginning of the financial year. It really started in the last year, and this has been implemented well throughout the province. And we can say that 75% of primary schools that were monitored have reported that feeding of the breakfast went very well on the days that the officials visited. The province has also extended the breakfast to all secondary schools, and that will be in 2024, where we can say that all schools actually benefit from that. In terms of the menu requirements, we also have noted that the province intensified monitoring and the meals provided to learners complied with the minimum feeding requirements. And furthermore, that all schools identified for phasing in of chicken livers were included in the first tranche for the year. Now, in terms of the protein, this is an added protein that we have provided as the first in the five-day menu cycle. And this emanates from a report that we had from the DPME, the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation, when they undertook an evaluation of the NSNP, and recommendations were made that we need to improve our protein alternatives, and chicken livers was therefore introduced in the last year. Next slide, please. In relation to KZN, according to the monitoring report and the interprovincial meeting that we held with our provincial counterparts in September, we have noted that the program has been restored successfully, and the province has actually reverted to the small medium enterprises. And I think I will not say much here, but the province will give much more detail as what this means. And we can safely say that the having reverted to small medium enterprises brought the program to stabilize. The program is also implemented in terms of the NSNP prescripts, where the provision of nutrition meals complies with the minimum feeding requirements. It can also be noted that there has been timeous payment of the SMMEs and the volunteer food handlers, and this is evident from the provincial expenditure on the NSNP. We can also note that breakfast program is being implemented in all districts. Next slide, please. In terms of DBE oversight, and this is just the key responsibility that national department has undertaken in terms of oversight and support for provinces, we can also highlight that a total of 131 schools and 7 districts were monitored since the quarter. And all schools that were visited complied with the minimum feeding requirements. And in this 131 schools, as I've indicated earlier on, the bulk of those schools included the schools in KZN and Eastern Cape. Provinces have also successfully phased in the breakfast program, as I have highlighted, for both the provinces, and this has been implemented in identified districts and schools. As at the quarter two, or rather, let me say, in this financial year, the breakfast program is being phased in some provinces and not all, and I know that Eastern Cape and KZN have started, as indicated. And therefore, this is in a phased-in approach, as it is in line with the limited allocation in the budget that has been provided by Treasury. In terms of food safety workshops, we have undertaken 4 food safety workshops, and this included Eastern Cape, but for now we have only reached 4 provinces, and Eastern Cape has been included. And then we also have 7 provinces that have introduced the processed chicken service project. And KZN and Northern Cape are yet to implement the new initiative, but the rest have undertaken the project quite successfully. And in conclusion, or rather, before I go into conclusion, Chair, this has not been indicated, but I just wanted to mention that in terms of the sector audit report, we have worked closely with the provinces, all provinces, as well as Eastern Cape and KZN, in terms of the findings of the audit of the Auditor General. And this was presented at our last interprovincial meeting that I have indicated in September. And we have agreed with the provinces that we will follow up on improvement plans, and this has been closely monitored together with the DBE. And in conclusion, Chair, I must indicate that there will be ongoing oversight and monitoring from the DBE, and we will continue to support the PEDs. And it is recommended that the Portfolio Committee note the update report on Eastern Cape and KZN. Thank you very much, Chair.
I thought Dem was gonna lead. Can we? Yes. Okay. All right, Dem.
Yes. Yeah. I'm around. Can I allow the MEC for KwaZulu-Natal to come in? Over to you, MEC. Then you will call the one who's going to present after making just an overview. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable DM, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, fellow MECs, Director General for Basic Education, Mr. Moen, HODs and DDGs in the meeting, all government officials, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We are deeply honored to come before this esteemed committee to account and present a status update on the implementation of the National Food Nutrition Program in our province. Chairperson, KwaZulu-Natal has come a long way since the regrettable situation that led to the non-delivery of food items to many of our schools at the beginning of the second term in April 2023. I am therefore pleased to report that the implementation of the NSNP in our province is now stabilized. Presently, over 2.4 million learners in 5,433 schools across our 12 education districts are receiving their meals as expected. This accomplishment is due to the unwavering support of the Department of Basic Education, the Provincial Treasury, and the Office of the Premier. They worked closely with us to get the program back on track and ensured that the funds allocated were utilized appropriately. following the logistics challenges that resulted in the collapse of the department's agreement with the former main sale provider, Personal Retail. The department was legally advised to grant the current 1,765 service providers a 3-year contract while the final legal processes are being resolved. The situation then normalized and the NSNP program began running smoothly at the end of April. To ensure we never face a repeat of the unfortunate events of April 2023, we have initiated the monitoring of this crucial program using the NSNP monitoring tools, which include plans to mitigate non-compliance. The department has also been strict on timely paying service providers, and verification is complete to prevent any further disruptions of the NSNP program. Honorable members, the department has since also revisited the delivery of food items by Personal Retail for a month of April 2023. A reconciliation was conducted for all delivery notes, considering specifications, quantities, and food quality. This process was conducted by the NSNP head office in consultation with all districts. After conclusion, a verification for 10 of our 12 districts, KZN Treasury recommended a partial payment of 7.9 million to Personal for goods delivered and received in accordance with the specification during the month of April 2023. This partial payment was effected on the 12th of October 2023, leaving us with two districts having an outstanding of payment of approximately 6 million. Chairperson, we also confirm that the department has thoroughly examined all evidence submitted by Personal Retail and found that approximately 48 million from their invoice cannot be verified. We therefore cannot recommend payment for this amount at present. Honorable members, regarding the implementation of Chicken Liver Project, KwaZulu-Natal has not yet commenced this initiative in the identified district of Mgungundlovu. We anticipate that the project will begin in November 2023. We, however, report that the product supplier, Flowtaste, has successfully completed the training of all volunteers and chief food handlers in the 155 schools that will be involved. This initiative is expected to benefit 187,000 learners and are looking forward to its implementation across the province. Moving on to another great initiative that has been well received in our province, Chairperson, we report that as KwaZulu-Natal, we started implementing the breakfast program in the second school term in all primary, combined and special schools. The breakfast we provide is in the form of insect maize porridge, and it adheres to the DPE food specification, which places emphasis on the high protein, less sugar and fat, and richness in vitamin A and vitamin B, as well as minerals. Honorable members, the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Education's total expenditure on the NSNP to date amounts to 1.2 billion. This represents 56% of the total budget allocation for the 2023-2024 financial year, which is set at 2.1 billion. I wish to once again express our gratitude to this esteemed committee for your guidance and support in ensuring that the department upholds the highest standards of integrity in both curriculum delivery as well as the management of public resources. With your permission, Honorable Chair, are we now hand over to the department's accounting officer, Mr. Ngobo, and the management team to provide a detailed presentation for this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, MSP. Through you, Chair and PM, if I may just go straight to the presentation. My device is giving me problems in terms of unmuting. I'm therefore appearing there as Nelisiwe Mhlongo. That was the backup plan in case there were any glitches with the devices that we're using. Otherwise, I'm Nathi Ngobo, the head of department in the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Education. The presentation has been flighted, and that slide that appears now there shows the table of contents, and I will request that we move on to the next slide, which talks to the purpose, because the purpose is to make a presentation providing an updated status report to the National Education Portfolio Committee in respect of the implementation of the National School Nutrition Program in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. Let's move on. As an introduction, we're saying that the National School Nutrition Program covers in KZN 2.4 million learners in 5,436 participating schools in 12 education districts in KwaZulu-Natal at a rand value of approximately 2.1 billion, inclusive of feeding, compensation of employees, and nutrition education activities that would include the training of food handlers. Next slide. The next slide just shows a representation of the districts, of the 12 districts making up the 2.4 million learners that we see it. And on the right, we are showing the employment being created through this project, that 14,868 people have been employed in this project or are receiving some form of income through this project by being food handlers or chief food handlers. Next slide. We thought we'd start with the rationale for the introduction of the hybrid model that we were attempting to introduce. We're saying that the Department of Basic Education's food specification guidelines and the province's quality plan provide for a very high quality food items for the program. The escalation of high quality food items is more than the inflation rate, and when food prices increase, the recommended MSNP food items become unaffordable, and service providers end up procuring poor quality food items or providing insufficient quantities or shortages in order to make do with the annual flat rate, because they receive a flat rate for the whole year, irrespective of the fluctuation in actual food prices, and that leads to them cheating on quality as well as quantity of the food delivered. Poor quality food items hit at the core of the program, as well as deliberate shortages, especially the provision of food weekly, and that is where it was the most glaring that most service providers were not providing food weekly because of the rising prices. Just as an example here, they get about 71 cents for a fruit, but you wouldn't find an apple anywhere in the market costing that amount. And that's an example of how the prices of food vis-a-vis the flat rate that we're giving them ends up with them actually now trying to make do with it. And unfortunately, they then compromise quality and quantity. We started experiencing a shrinking budget in the 2021-22 to a point where we had to really, really try hard to balance our books to ensure that we fund the enrollment. The shrinking budget prevented the department from affording breakfast for all our learners, among other things. Hence, we are providing learners in primary schools only when our aim was to even provide in secondary schools. Central monitoring of quality and economies of scale provides a solution and mitigate experience challenges to ensure economic, efficient and effective use of resources. And that was the rationale. We were looking at ensuring that there's quality, but also ensuring that we are able to trace back where the food came from in case, for example, of food poisoning, to avoid a situation where service providers would be buying anywhere, including in spaza shops, including in shops with, food that may have actually expired. So it was our attempt to try and have a central monitoring system of the quality of where the food originates before even it reaches our schools. Next slide. The next slide talks to the challenges then that we faced in April, which are well documented and well known. When the schools reopened on the 12th of April, there was non-delivery of food items in all our schools. And to mitigate that, we convened meetings with stakeholders, the district, as well as with the main service provider who have been awarded a tender to be the one where the other suppliers were obtaining food from. And the duty of that service provider was also to negotiate prices for us, that they be fixed for the whole year so that the service providers would actually benefit. When the delivery started, there were reports that some of the food was actually non-compliant. For example, soya mince, we received reports that it was non-compliant, and we informed the service provider immediately. And the soya mince, which is compliant, was then subsequently delivered to our schools, replacing the non-compliant one. There were also challenges of long distances traveled by service providers to the collection points. We set up more delivery points using schools and district offices closer to the schools, and we were able then to that intervention helped us to be able to deliver the food items to our schools even before the end of April. And the other issue was that of gas. Indeed, here we were able to supply gas through the 1,765 service providers. And that problem then was resolved in that way with those interventions. Next slide. I think we're now looking at the current situation with service providers. After receiving legal opinion and also extensive consultations with Treasury, DBE and other structures, we gave the current 1,765 service providers a three-year contract, of course, with a clause that is pending the finalization and how the legal processes would end up being finalized. We did this to ensure that there is stability, because in any event, through an SCM process, these 1,765 service providers had been procured. And the advertisement in the tender was, of course, for a three-year period. On the 28th of April, we issued a circular where we were expanding the service, to the service provider to ensure that feeding was not compromised for the duration of the contract. The department, in this respect, invoked clause 8.2.6 of our policy, which says where the private label program defaults or experiences challenges of non-compliance, which cause non-feeding, the department shall revert to the old method of supply and delivery of food items to schools, that of using successful service providers for each cluster to supply and deliver food items procured from any cash and carry, retailer, warehouse, distribution center, so on, to their relevant cluster of schools upon receipt of a purchase order note from the school. And that was the method that we've been replacing in the new contract. So we reverted back to the same terms that were there in the contract that had expired, before, allowed, of course, to do so by our policy. The situation normalized after we expanded the service to the 1,765 service providers. The situation normalized and the program started running smoothly from the end of April. Right at the beginning of May, the program started normalizing. The department has also put emphasis on timeous payments to service providers to prevent the collapse of the program. Let's move on to the next slide. The current situation with Pasina Retail, which was the successful service provider for the private label, they wrote to the accounting officer a letter saying that they were opting out. Towards the end of April, 26th April, they said they were opting out, and we accepted that they were opting out. But of course, their opting out of the contract had a suspensive condition, which was the payment for what they had delivered. And that was the condition that they put before us for them to opt out of the contract. We then took that to our legal advisors, and they advised us to agree to the termination of the contract or to the opting out of personal retail, and also to agree to the condition of actually paying them for what they had delivered. But we put our own condition, which was saying we will only pay once we've verified the delivery of food items, once we've verified the quantities, once we've verified the quality that the department actually benefited from. We have gone a long way towards fulfilling that suspensive condition for the cancellation of the contract. Because like the MEC was reporting, we have done that analysis of what Pasina delivered and what was received, the value of it, the quantities and so on. And we have paid an amount to them equivalent to what has been verified. Can we move on to the next slide? The next slide talks to support given by the Office of the Premier and other government departments, including, of course, the National DBE, which was the leading department in providing the support. And the slide explains how the support was structured. Can we move on to the next slide? It further details what each work stream was doing. There was a legal work stream which was whose duty was to look at the service level agreements and the bid documents in order to mitigate litigation exposure that could have come out of that, and all issues legal. There was a work stream that was delivering that, and there was a supply chain management and finance stream, which was looking generally at accounting principles as well as audit issues that might arise. And for the communication one, which was led by the Office of the Premier, and there was an ICT and monitoring and evaluation committee, which whose duty duty was to consolidate and prepare a monitoring report, because we were doing daily monitoring of our schools assisted by other departments at that point. Next slide. The next slide talks to the processes of verification of food items received from Pasina Retail in April, as against the invoice that they actually submitted for payment. We revisited the delivery of food items for the month of April, and we did a reconciliation of all delivery notes produced by Pasina Retail, signed off, of course, by our own officials. This process was conducted by our NSMP unit at head office in consultation with all the districts. We developed a capture tool to ensure proper calculations and quantities received. After the internal reconciliation process was completed, we then submitted to National Treasury for further verification and audit of goods received. At first, Treasury conducted a sampled verification of two districts and advised that we must go for the whole population, revisit the whole population to eliminate duplications and correct the formula in order to get correct calculations. We then proceeded to remove whatever duplicates were there. We then resubmitted documents to Provincial Treasury for further verification, and that was finalized in 12 districts. And a recommendation came from Provincial Treasury for payment after the finalization of 12 districts. The two outstanding districts were outstanding because we had not received all the necessary documentation from them, but we subsequently received it, and we've also completed verifying the two districts. Let's move to the next slide. The verification of the two remaining districts has been finalized, and we are expecting to receive a report, by the end of October, as to whether and how much needs to be paid. I think it's important to show to the public that our verification exercise was very strict, and the example of this, the illustration of this, is the fact that Pasina Retail had submitted an invoice totaling 124 million. But after verification and strict scrutiny, we were only able to approve for payment 70.9 million. And the remaining two districts will amount to about 6 million. So there would be something like 76.9 million that we will end up paying. Of course, there is a 48 million rand difference, and we are not going to pay until proof which is satisfactory to us is received that those goods in those and those quantities were actually delivered. So that's where it stands now in terms of a verification of food items received, as well as payments made or that are going to be made to Pasina, and we're confirming that further to the 70 million, only about 6 million has been cleared for payment, or is in the process of being cleared for payment, because it's still with the Provincial Treasury. Move on. The next slide talks to the update on the introduction of processed chicken livers. Again, the MEC touched on this. We've started implementing the chicken liver project. And we've done a lot of groundwork to prepare for the commencement of this project. At planning stage, there were three approved processors, approved, of course, by DBE nationally, and one of them pulled out or was struck off the list of approved processors, and were left with only two approved suppliers. We invited all three processors initially for a presentation with the aim to gain more knowledge on the actual product and the specifications, price, delivery model, accessibility, and sustainability. There were two consultative sessions with principals of schools and service providers within Mgungundlovu Local District, which is the pilot district. The district later sent survey forms to schools for written confirmations of the preferred product. So TASTE proved to be the preferred product for their price, delivery model, accessibility, and consistent supply with both schools and service providers. The next slide. So TASTE is strict on ensuring correct handling, storage, preparation of their products. Since it comes in pouches as a result, they requested that they are provided with an opportunity to train food handlers. And on the 14th to the 16th of August, they conducted and successfully completed the training of all our volunteer food handlers as well as the chief food handlers. The initial service level agreement signed between the district and service providers does not make reference to the provision of chicken livers. As a result, the department, through its legal services, has an addendum to the SLA, which has already been sent to the district for onward forwarding to the service providers, you know, so that chicken livers get included in the service level agreement with the service providers. It is envisaged that the project will commence as we begin November. The total number of schools that will be implementing the project is 455, which are the schools in Mgungundlovu District. And the number of learners is 187,163 learners. The total number of primary schools learners that are going to benefit is 112,657, and the secondary school ones are 74,506. The company has indicated that it will phase in refrigerators for all participating schools. The next slide. The next slide is an attempt to respond to some of the questions that have been in the media. So this slide seeks to clarify really some of the questions. One of the questions in the media when they heard about the chicken liver project was to ask why are we, sourcing them from one single supplier. And I think the previous slide has explained. And we explained that the chicken liver is the national program to enhance the meal plate for learners across the country. The Department of Education did not force service providers to source a single supplier, and there will be no reason for that approach. But of course, if suppliers that qualify in terms of being able to provide quantity and sustainability, if they are limited themselves to only two approved ones, it is obvious that you are not going to get a situation where there will be hundreds of suppliers of chicken livers. It's simply a question of the limited number anyway of suppliers that comply. The second question that has been out there is the department not afraid that this may result in another Pasina scandal? Those were questions, in the media, and we've indicated that the preferred processor that saw TASTE of chicken livers is providing chicken livers also in Gauteng, in 1,300 schools, in Free State, in 820 schools, in Northwest, in 100 schools, in Mpumalanga, 152 schools, in Limpopo, 25 schools. And in our province, they will be providing 455 schools. And if they are able to provide 1,300 schools, there's proof right there that they are not a risk to actually take, besides the fact that they are fully compliant anyway, and in terms of price, in terms of sustainability, in terms of access, they tick all the boxes. And that's why we are saying there are 455 schools, and therefore we don't have a reason to be worried, although, of course, we have always been on the lookout for mitigating any risk that may occur. Let's move on. On the update on the introduction of breakfast, I think the MEC also spoke on this one. So I will just summarize. Yes, we've started implementing breakfast in primary schools as well as in our special schools. So all our districts really all our primary schools and special schools are having breakfast before the commencement of the school day. Next slide. The next two or three slides will be talking to the issues raised by the Auditor General on material irregularity around the personal retail contract. The department received a letter from the AG advising of material irregularity, to which the department disagrees and has raised valid objections based on the following procedural errors by the Auditor General. And I must indicate that those issues that I'm raising here are the issues in dispute with the Auditor General and are in the dispute between the department in terms of how we interpret certain clauses in the tender document. Disputed issues, are in the process of being resolved with the Auditor General, of course, through dispute resolution processes, which are part of the audit processes anyway. I think our issue really is that we believe the Auditor General has deviated from the national standards of reporting a non-compliance in the manner in which they approached their report. The purported material irregularity, which according to AG caused substantial harm, is based on a non-feeding of 2,000 learners. As reflected above, the province provides nutritious meals to 2.4 million learners during school days. The acceptable and international audit reporting standards approach any report in an unbiased manner from the positive. In this case, the report would have read 99.92 of learners were provided with nutritious meals. But of course, those are issues that we are debating in the process of trying to resolve this dispute. It's actually the question of the AG never took us or was never taken through a walkthrough of the process, which is what normally happens during an audit process. And when there were issues, when there were questions that they needed to ask, and they were provided with responses, it is our firm belief that they did not consider our responses. Or if they did and still disagree, it's a matter then that will be resolved through the dispute resolution processes, which are basically ongoing as we speak. Let's move on. We I think I've already indicated that dispute resolution processes will be taken. And the reason why we are going this route is that when a material irregularity is declared, the accounting officer is bound by law to act to correct the material irregularity to ensure that it doesn't continue, it doesn't persist. Secondly, to mete out consequence management, where there is a need. And in the report of the Auditor General, there are serious issues that the Auditor General is raising, and the accounting officer must apply his mind then in terms of whether there are officials against whom consequence management must apply. And it's advisable to do so when, you know, all these issues in dispute are cleared. And once they are cleared, then the accounting officer will be in a position to meet out the way forward in terms of what actions to actually take. You know, particularly against the official, including, you know, pressing criminal charges where necessary. But we don't want to get there until the issues that are that are in dispute are clarified, so that when we get there, we don't get challenged by officials, you know, for you know, malicious litigation, and of course we don't get you know, the department into disrepute for having acted without really the facts at hand. So those are processes that, as the accounting officer, I'm engaged in, so that I'm able to take the right decisions in terms of what to do, you know, particularly around the question of consequence management, because as a department we are very serious on that one. We may have seen reports about consequence management and so on, but in the Department of Education in KwaZulu-Natal, we do take the issue of consequence management seriously. And the proof of that is that there are many senior managers, at even at director level and upwards, who have been through disciplinary processes and some actually dismissed in the past 2 or 3 years, which is an indication that the question of consequence management is taken seriously in the department. But of course, we don't just do it willy-nilly, hence the cautious approach that we're adopting at this point when there are still issues in dispute about the material irregularity. Let's move on. I think that what follows there are the response by the department and audit outcomes on sector procedures. The audit for the sector procedures was conducted for the 2022-23 financial year in Umkhanyakude using a sample size of 2 schools comprising of 0.3% in Umkhanyakude, and in Zululand it was 5 schools, which is 0.9%. We received communication audit findings in July, and we responded. You know, the findings identified the deficiencies on the following: the appointment of NSNP coordinator and committee, storage of NSNP stock, safeguarding of NSNP resources, monitoring and reporting. And the management disagreed with the findings, with the reasons, and provided audit evidence to back up for the reasons of disagreeing with the findings, but then the findings were actually resolved. In other words, the AG agreed with us that we had provided enough audit evidence and documentation to back up our disagreement with them, and that is how the findings were resolved. The next slide. The next slide talks to expenditure. You know, it gives an expenditure report on the grant. We are at 19 October, we were at 56%. And being at 56% by the end of September, which is like the half-year mark of the program in terms of the financial year, that 56% expenditure so far is actually confirmation of our earlier assertion that we are paying our NSNP providers timeously, and that is why our expenditure is actually at that point now. You know, because if we're not paying timeously, you would actually find that you know, our expenditure maybe is in the 40s, but the fact that I mean, we're at 56% at this time. Is actually an indication that we're paying timelessly. The next slide. The next slide is the conclusion. We are recommending that the Education Portfolio Committee considers and discusses the updated status report in respect of the implementation of the National School Nutrition Program in KwaZulu-Natal. Chairperson, thank you very much. That's the end of our presentation.
Chairperson, thank you. I now allow the Eastern Cape to present. MEC Eastern Cape.
Chairperson, should be a morning. Good morning to you. Good morning to the DM. Good morning to DG, the members of the committee,
Hello.
The officials from both provinces.
The baby that is looking at me.
Chair, so I just wanted not to take much of your time, Chair, except to acknowledge that indeed we have some glitches at the beginning of the year. Precisely because of the data verification and also transfer of monies to school. And precisely also again, because of the model that we use, because you'll remember that we are having a decentralized model in the context of the school nutrition program in the province. It's quite very well now when we have corrected our logistic nightmares on the basis of information that was not there from a variety of schools in some districts, which causes that problem. But for me, it's just one issue that I think probably needed an intensive discussion as an ongoing discussion, Chairperson, in various platforms around this project or program that we are engaged on. How do we ensure that this program can have a leverage in the crisis that the nation is confronted with of a growthless economy? Understanding that this is a program with almost about 13 billion rands per financial year. So I'm saying beyond just feeding schools, how do we engineer a program that begins to deal with the issue of the local economic development strategy so that we can be able to tilt the unemployed young people there using the financial muscle this program has? But again, Chair, the optimal utilization of the food security from the Ministry of Dr. Da, Department of Land and Agrarian Reforms and Agriculture, that partnership, how do we make sure that we are in a better space of feeding ourselves using the capacity of the state, also using other sector departments, as I'm lifting up the Dr. Da. So I'm saying, Chair, from where I am seated, we are quite very well, except these two areas that I'm saying generally. That's my opinion or my feeling, that we do have a capacity in terms of the financial muscle of this program to look into other avenues as the country is confronted with the triple crisis of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. So it can be one of those areas of focus in beginning to tilt the balance at that particular level, Chair. But lastly for me, before I hand it over to the team that I'm going with, is the credibility of the data and also the credibility of the information systems that we're using, which also gives us a bit of some advantage, because you do have a control over the process itself. So I'm saying there are areas of pockets of excellence on the model that we're using, but also the credibility of the food that we are using. Especially that the country again is challenged, Chair, with the emergency of food that is taken to our institutions of learning, which is not credible enough and not in the standard, as you have observed at a national scale, some provinces suffering from the poisonous food that some goggles and mothers that are allowed to sell food within the premises of the school. So you can't blame them, by the way. But it's a question of how then must we make sure that food in general, not for schools, Chair. Maybe let's explain that. Not for schools. There must be a way of ensuring that food in this country is credible. Otherwise, the crisis that is confronting education in some institutions in some provinces is an indication of food that is not closely monitored, which can be dangerous in one way or another. So it must be treated as an eye-opener, this crisis of food poisoning that is happening in school. I don't think it is right when it is happening to elders. So there must be a broad approach to appreciate the potential dangers that it has generally beyond just looking into schools, because it has manifested itself in schools in the context of the schools that are there now. But I'm saying it's a matter that we needed to look very closely into, Chair. Let me allow Mrs. Bola to take us through on the detailed presentation, Chair, which will give us the indications of where we are coming from, and what are the measures that has been put in place in to ensure that we learn out of the process itself and the ecosystem of the school nutrition program that we have engaged on. The HOD is here, Chairperson, let me indicate that as well. It's using the gadget of Kingan Ngobeni. Also, the DPG Jwakati is also here in the meeting. So at least we are a sizable team so that we can be able to put the facts on the table and be able to be schooled where there could be any areas of challenges and be able to be counseled so that we can go back to the drawing board so that we don't fall into that trap once more again, Chair. And otherwise, we sincerely apologize because sometimes logistics can create a bit of an aftertaste on a very good program that should be all of us take it a bit seriously. As the Deputy Minister was introducing this discussion, Chairperson, it is a fact that this program is the one that has made the access in education in the country. And I can assure you, without this program, we will forever have dropouts in the system, which people do not arrive to grade 12, which then creates a serious problem in terms of the security in the country. Because in essence, it means you will have a battalion of people whose skills are not at the level required, and therefore they will have to be channeled to security grant system of government and the sustenance of a welfareist state, which in one way or another could be a problem if you have got a growthless economy as we have now. So I'm saying it's a matter that I think needed a bit of a discussion, not necessarily as education sector, but also generally, what is the role of other sector departments on a glorious program like this? And how do we, therefore, from an integrated government planning, live to the expectations of the purpose of this particular program? Because in my view, it's one of those programs that have made life in villages, that has made kids to be accessing, and the number of kids that are in the basic education in the country has grown. And also the number of kids and students in the Department of Higher Education has grown precisely because of the stability in the basic education that we have. So I'm saying it's a matter that must not be taken lightly. It's quite very seriously, Chairperson. Allow me to invite Mrs. Bula, as mandated to present on behalf of the Eastern Cape Province. Chair, over to you.
Thank you very much, MEC. Good morning to the Honourable Members of Parliament on Portfolio Committee and the MECs, the Deputy Minister, the HODs, and all the senior managers of the Department of Education. I'll be taking you through this glorious program, as my MEC intimated, that is one of poverty alleviation programs in the province. The layout is as follows. I'll be talking to the program overview, the business plan overview, the funding model, the background to why the delays we had in April, the data challenges, the corrective measures that we've put in place, the feeding program from term 1 to 3, and the processed chicken livers update. Can you move to the next slide? Thank you. The purpose of this, Honorable Chair, is to provide a briefing guide on the delays and the corrective processes undertaken to disperse the National School Nutrition Program grant resources to all the benefiting schools in the Eastern Cape Province, and also to share the performance of the program to date. Next slide, please. Just the overview of the program. The NSNP is funded through a conditional grant, as we all know, and the output activities are aligned to the Division of Revenue Bill, which is gazetted in the annual conditional grant framework. Mainly, there are three pillars of this program. We're looking at the provision of a nutritious meal to all learners in schools, our main meal and the breakfast in some of our schools. And we're looking at the nutrition education and advocacy, which entails deworming and hygiene. And also, we're promoting sustainable food gardens in all our schools. And this program is implemented in the Eastern Cape using a decentralized model of funding, and it provides resources to schools for the purpose of employing volunteer food handlers, as well as procuring food items and the equipment, as well as the gas, which they use as the fuel for cooking. Next slide, please. In terms of the budget breakdown, which is decentralized to the schools, the budget allocation, we traced it from the previous years. The financial year 2021-2022, we had 1,421,000,000. In 2022-23, we had 1,449,000,000. And in 2023-24, we had 1.6 billion rands. And the number of feeding days In the previous years, we had 199 feeding days in 2021-22 financial year. And in 2022-23, we had 203 feeding days. And this year, we have 197 feeding days. And the learner numbers that were feeding this year is 1,639,208, compared to the previous financial year, which was 1,648,826. And in that year, it was 1,637,267. And the amount that we use in terms of feeding for the primary schools and our special schools, we're using this year 3.05 per learner. And in secondary schools, it's 3.65, moving from what we had in the previous year, which was 3.54, and in 2021-22, it was 3.44. For our small schools, that is those schools that have an enrollment of less than 50 learners, we had 6 rand, we used 6 rand in 2021-22. And in 2022-23, it was 7 rands per learner. And in 2023-24, the current financial year, it's 7.35 per learner. The food handler stipend that we give for our food handlers, it has increased from 1.6 per month to 1.7 in the last financial year. And this year, it's 1.7, 10 rands for this financial year, 2023-24. And in terms of the fuel, for those schools that have food handlers that are 1 to 4, it used to be 850. And for those that have 5 and above, it was at 4,250. That was in 2021-2022. It increased in 2022-2023 to, for those that have 1 to 4 food handlers, it's 900. And this year, for those that have 1 to 4, food handlers, it's 900 per gas canister. And for those that have 5 food handlers and above, it's 3,600, which is the maximum. And the UIF that we're paying this year is 34.20 in this current financial year, having increased it from 34 rands in the previous year and 32 rands in the previous financial year, 2021-22. Can we move to the next slide? As we said, that as a province, we're using the decentralized model. The funding system moves from DBE. The funds are received by DBE. After compliance with all the business planning framework and processes, then compliance certificate is issued by DBE, following adherence to all the prerequisites, such as the feeding cost that we have talked to in the previous slides, the number of feeding days that we mentioned, the volume of the volunteer food handler stipends that we have mentioned in the previous slides, then all that is submitted for a menu and a monitoring plan. And then further to this, the compliance to the EC 4.1 Gazette for transfer of funds and cash flow protection submissions are then collated by the department to enable provincial treasury to issue correspondence permitting the commencement of expenditure. Can we move to the next slide? Now, talking to the delays that we had previously in April this year, the National School Nutrition Program develops and circulates the disbursement schedule each budget year to commit the department to earmarked dates throughout the budget year. Now, the schedule indicates the date of the expected run, and this year the expected date was the 24th of April, 2023. But prior to the run, there are several activities that have to be concluded for the process to comply with all the required financial and administrative requirements. First of those is the databases of operational schools, which is updated and the learners are verified. The second one is the inclusion of any new schools to the program that were gazetted after the business plan was approved. And then in the beginning of each new financial year, there'll be a database formulated from the MIS data which is utilized to align funding to all learners. Next slide, please. Can we move to, thank you. The Departmental Educational Management Information System, that is our EMIS system, the EMIS unit in the province, experienced a delay in finalizing the collection of this data during the onset of this academic year, 2023. And this was due to some schools struggling with submitting data due to challenges with the network that was perpetuated sometimes by load shedding in some areas. There was also a certain number of schools that experienced challenges with databases that could not meet the set validation, the criteria, and were rejected due to not meeting the validated criteria. So those were the challenges mainly in the data that we had this year. Can we move to the next slide? Then we corrected this by making sure that during the commencement of the financial year, there were delays in the conclusion of the input process by schools. And then the department mobilized the support of the district-based EMIS officers, because each district has got its own EMIS officer, to consolidate the information as accurately as is possible. As a result, all schools received their allocated funding by 9th of May this year, instead of the 24th of April, which was the initial date. But that was corrected. Thank you. Then in terms of the nonprofit institution feeding, we have learner numbers that are receiving the main meal. For quarter one, we had 1,608,397 learners feeding the main meal. In quarter two, we had 1,359,419. And in quarter three, we had 1,603,246. Then in terms of the breakfast, as we have introduced it, the learner numbers that fed for breakfast in quarter one was 1,060,473. For quarter two, it was 1,057,831. And for quarter three, it was 1,061,335 learners. Then the transfers that have been there, the amounts totals that were transferred to the schools, it was 390 million for quarter one. And for quarter two, it was 480 million. And for quarter three, it was 328 million rands. Then the number of volunteer food handlers was 12,545 in quarter one. In quarter two, it was 12,526. And in quarter three, it was 12,488. And we're still in quarter three now. Can we move to the next slide? In terms of strategic priorities, improving our protein content or alternatives, as a province, we have moved into the chicken liver content, to the canned chicken livers. We preferred the canned chicken livers as they have a longer life shelf life compared to the sachets, because we're avoiding issues of refrigeration and load shedding. So in terms of the business plan, our inputs, we're planning to feed 1079 schools in three districts, 473,739 learners with an amount of 6 million. But in quarter one, we fed 802 schools, 267,402 learners with an amount of 5.8 million rand 60 cents. So all schools identified for the phasing in of the processed chicken livers have been included in the first tranche for this year. Can we move to the next slide? Then this is the tranche payment schedule that has been dispersed to our schools. The first tranche was concluded on the 24th of April, and the second tranche was concluded on the 13th of July. As you see, the schools reopened on the 18th of July, and the costing was done in June, compiled in July, submitted in July, so that before the schools open, the tranches have been transferred to the schools. And for the third tranche, on the 5th of October, it was concluded because the schools reopened on the 10th of October. So before the schools opened, it was concluded, submitted in early October, compiled in late September, and the costing was done on the 22nd of September. And then the fourth tranche, which will be the last tranche for this financial year, will be dispersed on the 11th of January, since the schools will be reopening on the 17th of January. We'll be starting with the costing by end of November, and compilation will be done by 8th of December, and the submission will be done by the 14th of December, so that we are ready to conclude it by 11th January before the schools reopen in 2024. Can we move to the next slide? As a conclusion, the National School Nutrition Program operates in a highly, highly regulated environment, and therefore commitment is required to ensure the successful, credible, and verified transfers. It also requires a multidisciplinary approach, and that's what we're trying to do in Eastern Cape. The database provided from the consolidation of the school-based learner reports, it allows government to link funding to the beneficiary. It is a continued requirement to ensure that funds are appropriated and utilized for the intended purposes of feeding the learners more than anything else. And following the delays that we experienced during quarter one of this financial year 2023-24, all data was received timeously now and funds dispersed accordingly to schools. And therefore, there are no further delays in the disbursement of funds, and we don't expect any in the future. Thank you very much, Chair. This is the last slide in terms of the program in the Eastern Cape. Thank you for the opportunity. Over to you, Honorable Chair, or MEC.
Chair. Thank you. This is our presentation, and I'm logging out of the meeting now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Yeah, now I'm logging out because I'm already at the slide. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, DM, MEC, KZN, and Eastern Cape. Let me see in the Eastern Cape, I mean in KZN also have said she might have connectivity problem where she is, and she's also not well. But we will see as we proceed. I see two hands, members. There's the end of Honorable Fansail and Mora Setla in that order.
Good morning, Chairperson, to yourself, also to the departments, the various provinces, and also the colleagues online, including our visitors that's listening in. Chairperson, just yesterday we saw shocking reports of 143 learners from three schools in Kumani, Queenstown, and the Eastern Cape being admitted to hospitals and clinics late last week. This highlights the crisis in the Eastern Cape and the need for safe and nutritious meals to be provided at schools. So it obviously desperately needs food inspections to be intensified, and that action must be taken against shop owners that are found to be selling expired goods, as was the case in Kumani. Will the MEC not consider running a program of this nature across all areas where school feeding schemes are provided, or do they have to wait for tragedy as this to actually in some steps? I also wanted to check with the MEC of the Eastern Cape whether all schools have proper kitchen facilities and whether they check whether the suppliers comply with Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act, and if all of these have certificates of acceptability. In Chairperson, for the KZN MEC, the same sort of question to ask whether schools have proper kitchen facilities where school feeding schemes are provided, and also to see whether they also check with suppliers if they comply with the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act, and if all the suppliers has certificate of acceptability. We also saw the issues in both of these provinces where children went hungry for weeks, where these provinces has dropped the ball and not having the hand on the pulse of these programs. Has any consequence managed to take in place in either of these provinces? And if not, how long will it take and what measures will be put in place to ensure that this doesn't happen again? Then just overall talking about the NSNP, if we look at breakfast time, which is before school and a good time to feed breakfast, whether lunchtime of 11:30 is the correct time. We all know that learner transport is also very problematic in all the provinces, with some learners only getting home well after 3 p.m. in the afternoon. These children will be starving again by this time, as breakfast and lunch are too close to each other. So can we not maybe rethink the lunchtime at 11:30, as this is still technically in the morning? Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, your network is very bad.
I'm on N1 traveling to the airport, but I'm contemplating to stand aside and the park so that I can talk. Can you hear me now?
Talk and change. Your network is bad.
No. I can come later rather than to just rush because I've got points to talk. Give somebody, I'll come later.
Not a problem, Dada.
Thanks, Chair. Can I just check, Chair, if I'm audible before I continue?
You also want to come later?
No, I wanted to check if I'm audible, Chair, before I continue.
Yes, you are audible.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, colleagues from DBE, the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. I do have very specific questions for you. But before I go to that, I want to echo what the Chair's sentiment that obviously we are all proud of the Springboks, and I think it's testament that we are stronger together. We should never divide people, but rather look at their strength and our diversity and see how we can best utilize that to take our country forward. And then secondly, a link to that, I mean, comments have been made by the Deputy Minister as well as the MEC from the Eastern Cape about how important this program is. And I think the taxpayer and the government utilizing that money to make sure a program like this is actually fully functional is very, very, very important. However, having access to the program is one thing, and consistently sustaining the program of quality to make sure that children get nutritious meals on time is even of a much more vital importance. So I just wanted to check very specific questions. There will be some questions for DBE, one or two, and then specifically for the two provinces. Now, I just wanted to start with KZN. There's an indication that the person that benefited from the contract, the 2.1 billion contract, to facilitate other service providers in distributing meals in KZN may be a relative of the Director General of KZN. There may be some foul play indicated on that. You're now reporting to us today that you can't necessarily implement consequence management because there are some disputes that do exist. However, I just wanted to check with you whether you have done any form of investigation or has there been any investigation done regarding the allegation that that contract was given to a family member of the Director General and not following the right procurement processes in line with the law as being indicated or now disputed by you, by Auditor General and Treasury and other entities that are financial in your province. That's the first question. The second question linked to that, do you then have timelines to indicate to us as to when are you able to ascertain which officials may have necessarily approved this, which may not be in line with law or regulations which you dispute at this point in time, so that we can get to the bottom of exactly what happened in the KwaZulu-Natal debacle, because it's actually quite a travesty, and it's sad that children had to go through that. At the end of the day, that affects, you know, quality learning in the classroom. So I just wanted to check with KZN specifically on that particular issue, based on your presentation, on your reporting, and it would be interesting to hear what your response is on that. Then again, this question is both to KZN and DBE. Why has KwaZulu-Natal and the Northern Cape not yet implemented the Chicken Livers Initiative? Is there a specific timeline that you consider of doing so? And how has the current avian flu crisis, which has affected chickens and so on, affected your initiatives? So I just wanted to check with that, and maybe DB will come into in that particular question. And then KZN again, why was an incompetent company awarded a tender in KZN to provide food to schools beyond the company's capacity? Was there no thorough background check vetting done on that particular issue? Because you will be able to get to the bottom of exactly what happened there if you start asking and seeking some of these questions and pursuing them. And what happened to, I did ask about what happened to officials found to have misled the department in awarding that particular tender. So these are questions that must exist. And the reason why I ask this is because South Africa is plagued with corruption and maladministration and irregular expenditure because there are no consequence management systems in government that actually follow through with that consequence management, contrary to what you've pointed out to us today. I mean, I could refer you to so many cases regarding selling of posts in schools in KZN and various other things that officials are directly involved in. And I don't think that there's adequate consequence management as we expect it to be. So it will be interesting to hear your response on that particular issue. I just also wanted to check. I mean, education was disrupted in schools where deserving learners spent days without food, which is devastating. What did the department do to mitigate against the loss of learning? Was there a significant loss of learning? What have you done doing that? I mean, we've got a very big crisis now, 8 out of 10 grade 4 children not being able to read for meaning in any language. And we're still struggling to get from the department as to what the catch-up plan is, while other countries like Finland, Chile, even the Western Cape has put aside 2 to 3 hours extra per week for reading. For meaning. So, it would be interesting to see whether there were any learning losses that you considered in those schools and what catch-up have you done to make sure that those learners don't fall behind to the rest of your cohort of learning. And then I just wanted to check with, all three, the two departments and DBE, what happens to the food produced in school at food gardens? How do you regulate that? The school use it for their own use, and what is the way in which they go about doing it? And then, how is the department ensuring that food safety at national, provincial, district, and school levels exists? I mean, Honourable Fanthale referred now to the poisoning, of children in schools, Ekomani, and there are other cases that are resurfacing in this instance. And what mechanisms are being put in place to make sure that there is quality food from a national, provincial, district, and a school level to ensure that our children don't end up being sent to graveyards to schools, whereas a meal is supposed to be used as an incentive, not as a death trap for a child. And then to the Eastern Cape, were schools only monitored for the day of the visit that you have indicated to us? And what about the 236 schools that didn't or hadn't given learners breakfast on that day? What happened to those particular schools in that instance? And how is the department, from a national level, monitoring the NSNP the rest of the time, outside of the times that you visited those particular schools? And I think some of my questions for the Eastern Cape have been covered by Honorable Fanthale. The last one for me, Chair, is that I wanted to check with DBE if there's still a memorandum of understanding between the Department of Basic Education, Social Development, and Agriculture based on the NSNP. And I ask this because I know that providing meals to learners in schools initially is a social intervention. It should be a social development intervention in terms of budget-wise, but implementation is correctly placed in the Basic Education Department. Having seen other countries, but it will be interesting to see whether that memorandum will come of agreement still exists and what exactly does it look like. Thank you so much, Chair.
All right, Principal, are you fine now?
I'm all right, Chair, provided you will be able to hear me. I'm static.
The bokeh just landed. Oh, it's fine.
Do you want to go to OR Tab? Look, Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity. And once more, let me appreciate, join others who appreciated, of course, the presentations, both from DBE, from KZN, and from the Eastern Cape. It is a long-awaited report, Chairperson, given the tragedy that befell our schools in those two parts of our country. You see, Chair, just to give a little bit of testimony and background, some of us are where we are now simply because of this nutrition program. In the mid-60s, when the architect of apartheid, H.F. Verwoerd, was the Minister of Native Education, he introduced this kind of a scheme. He might have been having a different intention altogether. But for your information, let me tell you, I went to school in those years simply because I wanted to participate. They were reporting to us that there is a cup of a Movite, very sweet, and that thing in itself influenced some of us to go to school. You go there with expectation that will benefit something apart from education itself. But now, under the circumstances, to get a report that learners went to school expecting to eat and not eat, let's all say it was a tragedy which should never recur. But however, against that background, when it was spotted and reported, we want to appreciate, especially KZN, the efforts that they have taken to correct the wrongs. The hallmark about any person is not about how many times you commit mistakes, but the bottom line is how many times are you able to rise after in each and every committal of a mistake. So we commend you, Honorable MEC, and the HOD, Babama Poloba, for the efforts that you have taken after realizing that things are not going rosy. We want to take this opportunity to commend you for that. However, I've got just some few questions in line with that. You are talking about the disputes which you encountered. The first one is with regard to the service provider, and your report, HOD, Babama Poloba Nathi, you are indicating that you are addressing same through dispute resolution procedures within the department, and together, so that you are able to get amicable resolution, I mean answer to the dispute is going on. Now my question is, have you also thought of any fallback strategy should you not be able to agree? Because we don't want to see the whole department being litigated because they were not able to get the necessary assistance. When I'm talking about a fallback strategy, I'm talking here mechanism, I'm talking here about, have you also thought of seeking, while you are being in dispute, assistance from DBE in Pretoria. That's the first thing. The other dispute your report is mentioning is with regard to the report from the Auditor General. And you are also indicating that it is also a challenge, and then to an extent that you have not yet found each other. Now, my question again, don't you think there will come a time when you would need some intervention of some kind? And if so, where have you thought of? So that there should be, you see, let us avoid where possible to take the court route, because in a court route, there is no winner and there is no loser. We will all feel the pinch after we have wasted quite a lot of money. Maybe the second question, Chairperson, which may also mark to me the last question, is with regard to the ongoing reports on food poisoning. To both KZN and Eastern Cape. Of course, Honorable Marina has just indicated, Honorable Fanzei, let's just indicate an incident in Tabeja, wherein a report came in of unexpected food poisoning, which distantly affected our kids. And that is not just a case in isolation. There are many cases which are taken around where our kids are eating poisoned food, either because maybe they bought them from an incredible people, we do not know. Either they got the food which were over-storaged, we do not know. But I want to know from both departments, what is it that they are doing to avoid a repetition or a recurrence of such misfortunes as this one of food poisoning? Thank you very much, Chairperson. Now I can get away. I'm heading for...
No, it's fine. Principal, there's no other end. Members, I take it that Simnandi, we are okay. I just want to speak on the, especially to the Eastern Cape, just to speak on the, you know, there was a time, and MEC, I think you were with us when we visited some of the schools there, particularly in Mount Fletcher. I think it was in Mount Fletcher where there were issues of running water. In fact, there was not even a kitchen. I remember parents were cooking from outside. And I think the number of learners there were too high. Now, in situations like that, where there is a lot of pressures, there is no kitchen, there is not even equipment, how do we make sure that we safeguard our learners? You know, now with members, it's unfortunate that these incidents now that are happening throughout the country of food poisoning with our learners, they are happening during this time that we are dealing with the NSNP. But which is something that we think the sector must be able to discuss, because our learners, I think there needs to be some sort of conscience that is raised to them. Because these incidences, they had happened in the Eastern Cape, but not unless I'm wrong, probably the MEC will correct me It's learners who bought buns from the people that are selling buns, and they were faced with that incident. The same incident happened in the Northern Cape, where the children have bought snacks, chips, and there was food poisoning in it. And the other week, I think it was in Gauteng, in Roodepoort. So where school children will be affected, but it's not necessarily what they would have eaten at school. And I want us as a portfolio committee at least to try to differentiate the two. Those incidents are not happening in school premises, but they affect the school. Because I remember in the Northern Cape, they had to dismiss the school for that day. The other issue which you have raised, the working relations, particularly with the issues of the issues of food with the Department of Agriculture, MEC, Eastern Cape. One is interested in finding out whether are you planning to have those collaborations, or rather the MOUs, or is there something happening with regards to that? Because one thinks that would be a great initiative to have your own food as government delivering it, or rather making those food for the for our children. And in both provinces, I'm interested in finding out how many foodstuffs, or rather the food that is procured from local municipalities. And I'm talking to provinces where probably this is not a centralized procurement. I think those are the issues that I would want to raise from my side. And I'm going to allow, I don't know now who leads with responding, because the DM left from DBE, and then I'm not sure if the DG is, or must I just give the provinces? Dr. Whittle?
Yeah, Chair, I was going to say, I'm not sure if DG is in the meeting either. So maybe I can start, and okay, then I'll invite the provinces to then, to respond as well. So on the food poisoning matter that I think many of the honourable members have raised, you're right, Chair, that we haven't found any of this to have happened in any of our schools. But of course, children buy these food stuff either on their way to school or during school. A few years ago, we offered some guidelines to schools and to provinces about how to manage that. But it is a matter that we're addressing at the national level. Coincidentally, today we have a NAT joint with all of the various departments that many of the members have referred to look into this matter and then to find a response to it. In terms of the kitchen facilities, and quite a number of the members have raised this as well, it is an issue that we are giving attention to. In the new norms and standards for school infrastructure, for example, there is an allocation of kitchen facilities where new schools are built. And the provision of adequate kitchen facilities in existing schools is a challenge that we address on an ongoing basis. On the program at the moment, we provide an allocation to provinces to provide container kitchen facilities in instances where there are no other kitchen facilities available. And in addition, we provide an allocation on the grant for equipment that would include stoves, PPEs for the volunteer food handlers, as well as for utensils for pots and pans and plates, etc. The question asked by Honourable Fansayo, and I think it's linked to the question also asked by Honourable Nodada. Honourable Fansayo asked about the lunchtime. Now, one of the issues that we you know, obviously have to consider is if we are now only busy introducing breakfast. Then once all of the schools have introduced breakfast, then we'll obviously have to look at that time at which we serve lunch. And so that's something that over the next year or so, certainly we'll give attention to. Honorable Nodada's one, I'm just trying to find it quickly, Chair. Was broadly around school monitoring. So we use on the program at the moment, we use a monitoring system that we called MRR, Monitoring, Reporting and Response, which is a system that we do with one of our civil society partners. On the program, we have appointed monitors. So all of the provinces have monitors on the program. They use this particular monitoring system where we provide a grading, you know, for schools, almost like a traffic light system, red, amber, and green. And we ask all of the monitors to visit schools at least once, you know, in their area of responsibility. It's not a perfect system, as you know. We constantly provide training and support to the monitors to ensure that we can improve the quality of the monitoring that we provide, you know, as part of the system. Honorable Nodada also asked about food gardens. You know, previously we had food gardens as one of the pillars of the school nutrition system. We've since removed that as one of the key pillars that we support as a department, primarily because it is so difficult to maintain food gardens in areas where you don't have a commitment from schools. Of course, we encourage schools to work with private sector partners, and we have several partners at the moment that support those initiatives with us. In areas where the food gardens work quite well, we don't provide any guidelines to schools on how to do that. I know that I recently visited a school in one of the provinces where they sell quite a lot of the produce that they you know, get from their gardens to the local food market, and you know, they raise some funds for the school like that. The other issue that I just wanted to mention on the kitchen facilities, Chair, is that we work with quite a lot of our partners, Tiger Brands, Unilever, PepsiCo, and so on, to provide kitchen facilities. We have a partnership with MassMart, where they on an annual basis provide, I think, something like 30. You know, container kitchens for us, fully equipped to schools that would need them. The MOU with agriculture, and it comes back to some of the questions that the chair have asked around working with other departments, and also a question that I think Honourable Morwa Setla has raised about you know, local economic empowerment. We currently are looking very closely as part of our relationship with Brazil through BRICS. We're looking at the system that they use. They call it homegrown school feeding, where Brazil has, you know, strong relations with local farmers, and they link them to schools. And we're hoping in the next 6 months or so that we'll do a study tour. We managed to meet with the BRICS colleagues, with the Brazilian colleagues when they were here for the BRICS summit. And it is something that we're looking at and something that we're hoping we can replicate in our country as well. Just to also indicate, Chair, that on the program we work quite, you know, we work with quite a wide range of other government actors. We work very closely with the Department of Health on both food safety, as well as the development of the menus, as we are now looking to introduce a similar nutrition system for the ECD sector. Again, we're working very closely with the Department of Health. But we also work with the Department of Trade and Industry in terms of the specifications for the various products that we have on the program. And like Honorable Nodada indicated, that's quite important for us because that allows us to control the quality of the food that we provide to our children. This MOU that Honorable Nodada is referring to about, you know, working with agriculture and DSD, there is a process in government that we are part of, and it's about providing nutrition security, not only to school children, but also to their families. And the department participates there, but I'm not aware, Honorable Nodada, of a formal MOU between us, agriculture, and the DSD in that regard. Honorable Chair, maybe it's good for me to pause there and then hand over to MEC Fraser from KZN first, and then after responses, we can hand over to MEC Gadi. MEC KZN?
Is she not struggling perhaps with the network?
Yeah, maybe that's the case. HOD, are you still in the meeting with us?
Yes, I am in the meeting. Yes, I am in the meeting. Can I go ahead and respond to some of the issues raised by the honourable members? Okay, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, please, HOD.
Yes. Honourable Chair, I must start by thanking the members for the constructive criticism and also the counsel that they've been giving us throughout, together with the questions that they've been asking. Most of the questions have been dealt with by our national DBE, and therefore I will just concentrate only on those that were specific to the KZN province. I'll start with the Honourable Van Zyl's question on consequence management and link it with Honourable Nodada's question again on consequence management, and the question specifically from Honourable Nodada was, when are we going to know whether and when and who needs to be taken on, for disciplinary processes if necessary. I think my response to that is that, one, we are committed to really, effecting consequence management against any official who may be found to have, committed an act of misconduct during the awarding of this contract to Pasina Retail. The time frame, as soon as the issue around the Auditor General's findings are cleared, we will know, I will know at least as an accounting officer, whether there are officials that need to be brought to book. Just to illustrate to the honourable members what I'm talking about, one of the reasons for the material irregularity raised by the AG is that they are saying when the service provider was awarded the contract, he had indicated that he had two warehouses, and the BEC of the department only visited one of the warehouses and not the other one. And when we investigated that internally to check whether that really did happen, and with the aim of actually charging the BEC, of course, if we found that they had misled the accounting officer in saying that they'd done everything according to the tender document, we found that indeed the BEC visited one warehouse of that service provider, but that warehouse of the service provider that they visited complied with all the requirements set out in the tender in respect of the number of square meters that were required of the warehouse. So the second one was actually an additional one, which was not necessarily a requirement in terms of the tender, in terms of the advertised tender requirements. So they visited one, and it was in full compliance with the specifications in the tender document, and they believe that it was not necessary to visit the second one because the first one had already met the requirements. So it's disputes of interpretation of the tender document, such as those that will allow the accounting officer to actually make a decision as to whether any wrong was done. Of course, I will be taking and I am taking legal advice on all these issues, but I can assure this committee that I will act, at the sign of any irregularity or any misconduct perpetuated by any member or any official involved in these processes, be it in the bid evaluation committee or in the bid adjudication committee. The second issue or question raised by Honourable Notata was that there are allegations that the Director General of the province is a relative of the past seen or the own.
Is it me or the HOD is lost?
No, I think the HOD is lost too.
Oh, okay.
It's lost there, and I really need to hear that part.
I gave you a question from above. Just in case.
yes,
to me, you got it.
Let's take a bet and see if we are getting it back or what.
It must come back.
Okay, he's back. Okay, you can proceed.
Yes, thank you.
Principal, whoa, when you can't talk, wherever you are, there are problems.
Yeah. But thank you very much, Chair. I was saying I've already responded to the question of when are we going to know and whether we're going to take steps on consequence management. All the other questions on chicken livers have been responded to. I think one that needs a response from KZN is one on why was an incompetent company appointed. I would say that when the company was appointed, they had technical sponsors, technical partners who were a reputable retail outlet that does specialize, of course, in food. And that retail outlet pulled out of whatever agreement they had close to the time for delivery. And the winning service provider then had serious logistical problems, because it turned out that the technical partner that they had, who was the Spark Group at that point, had pulled out. And that left them with no logistics at all, or a logistical nightmare in terms of delivery of some of food. So at the time of awarding the contract, that agreement between the service provider and that technical partner of theirs was in place, and there was no anticipation that it would collapse at some point, leading to actually the collapse of the program that resulted in the service provider unable to deliver food at expected times and having to try to find alternative means of actually doing this. The next set of questions came from the Honorable Tisho Mkulu, the principal, Honorable Marwa Settler, around the disputes. I think we are in full agreement that we have to avoid the court route. It's expensive and it also takes long to get any dispute resolved. And it's true that sometimes nobody actually wins in a situation like that. And that is the reason why we are in talks, for example, on the Pasina dispute. We strongly believe that it's not going to get there to a position where we take each other to court, because when they wrote to say that they are opting out of the contract with that condition that they be paid for whatever they had delivered, the department acceded to, of course, upon advice from our legal team that said that there was no way we can pay for benefits obtained, but our obligation is to ensure that we do thorough checks and balances in terms of food items, quantities, qualities received, and the pricing of those food items. Hence, in our presentation, we dealt with how we arrived at what needed to be paid to Pasina. We strongly believe that avoids now any legal dispute, even going to court, even with the outstanding amount that they claim, which we have not paid because of lack of proper documentation and evidence of delivery. We don't believe that will end up in court, because if they are able to provide proof, the legal advice we have is that if they are able to provide proof and we are satisfied with the proof that that they give, of course, counterbalanced by what we have received, both in our collection points and in our schools themselves, if there's evidence that food was delivered and it was in the quality that is required, as would have signed off for by our own officials as department and our principals, then we will, of course, together with provincial treasury, be obliged to pay. But until that happens, we are not paying any amount that has not been verified. I think even with that of the AG, we believe that we'll find one another there without necessarily taking the findings on review or anything, because we actually believe that it's minor differences in terms of interpretation of the tender document. But we are in agreement that there are learners that were not fed over those days. That's common cause, and we actually believe that we did everything we could to put the program back on track, and indeed it was back on track. By the beginning of May, it actually was back on track. But I must say, just in passing, that even during the worst of times, we had given instructions to our schools to say that they must ensure that at least learners are fed with whatever they had left over from the previous terms, because schools have food stored in schools, and they were just given permission through a directive that I gave to say, during this difficult period where deliveries of food items are not happening, they can use whatever food is there, cook whatever food is there, without necessarily following the menu for the day. And that's what we said. For example, if it was a day for amasi and putu, and there was no amasi, but there was beans, we said you can cook putu and beans. That's the latitude we gave them, not to follow strictly the menu during that time. And we did that in order to ensure that at least learners were fed. It may not be the menu designed or planned for the day, but it would be a meal in any event. And most of our schools did that. Food, NSNP registers, of course, also indicate that schools did feed. They may not have been feeding the menu for the day, but they did feed. There were, of course, cases where schools didn't have leftovers from the last term, and that is regrettable. I think on food poisoning and other issues, Dr. Wheatley has responded to that, and there's no need for us to go back there. On key questions of chicken livers and so on, I think he also has responded to that. Safe to say that KZN was, of course, in the planning stages to implement the food chicken liver program. And at the beginning of November, we will be implementing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, HOD. Thank you, honorable members. I hope the responses from the HOD will cover all the concerns from our honorable members, except to add on the issue of the checking in ensuring that the learners are getting the correct food. In KZN, we use our NSNP coordinators who assist in terms of monitoring compliance. But again, we also conduct workshops for our service provider, Winen, and have feedback before he finishes his responses. Thank you very much. Let me get back to you.
Thank you very much, MEC. Can I then invite MEC Gadi to come in?
Thanks once more. Good afternoon to you, Chair. Good afternoon to DDG and HODs of both provinces and the entire government officials that are here, and honorable members. Partly, Chairperson, we have covered the ground as tabled by the honorable members in terms of the questions that were directed to both provinces, in my view. Except to say from the question from Honorable Van Zyl, out of the 149 learners that she was referring to, we are only having one learner now, which is still hospitalized. And we are closely monitoring that precisely because of the risk that was there before, but of course, she is covering quite very well. But also safe to say, Chair, you are correct. The issue of the food poisoning is not necessarily linked to the school nutrition program. It has got more to do with the uncredited staff that is sold in the villages, in the townships, in the streets where the institutions are located. And kids buy ice cream, snacks, and buns next to the tech shops that are around the schools. It's a matter that, in my view, I said earlier on, needed a very closer look. Hence, the provincial government took a decision.
Can you please? Thank you. You can proceed, Mrs. Please.
So I'm saying, Chair. Hence, the provincial government took a decision with the Chrisan municipality in Queenstown to make sure we mobilize all the stakeholders, in particular the environmental health inspectors and also the SAPS and with the Ministry of Education to ensure that at least there is a cleanup campaign around these stalls that are selling these products because of the experience that we just talked about, Chair. So it's a matter, in my view, that needed a very, very, very close look and quite a bit a sensitive one. Because if you look very closely to it, predominantly these products are in the foreign national stores, unfortunately, and it has got a potential to take the country back in terms of the xenophobic attack that was once there. So I'm saying it's quite a very sensitive topic that we're discussing here. But of course, we have learned our own lessons and we're busy working on that. The second aspect was the issue of the MOU with Dr. Da. Yes, we don't have it now yet, but there are unstructured working relations with Dr. Da, and hence we have upscaled the agricultural schools that we have, their capacity in the province, so that we can be able to give them a leverage of being food hubs for the nearby schools and also feed their own kids in the context of recycling the fiscals that they get from the Department of Education. So we are in that route, but of course we have not yet been able that much there. But I'm saying there are processes that are beginning to shape in the context of ensuring that there is a structured MOU between Dr. Da and also the Department of Education and also the Department of Health. There is that discussion that is currently underway. Lastly, for me, Chairperson, is also on what Honourable Nodada raised, the significance of the disruption that might have been caused by the delays in transferring school funds for nutrition in various schools. The advantage you have of CERTA is that in its own DNA, catch-up programs are there, whether there is any form of a disruption or not. That's the advantage that you have in basic education across all provinces. Whether there is a disruption of food poisoning, whether there is a disruption of a virus that emerges at that time, whether there is a disruption on the basis of initiations that are happening in June or earlier in December, whatever that, the catch-up program is part of our own vocabulary that has actually made us to be where we are as a country in terms of academic performance of the system. So I'm saying, I can confirm that we have been able to close up the gap that has been created by that unfortunate situation. Yes, of course, I can confirm as well, lastly, that we have started the initiative of food gardens across those identified, especially those schools that are participating on the competitions, like your Tiger Brand, your Mass Mart, and Unilever. You see, because those programs give a space for the schools, both academically to understand the thesis of food production, but also to work around the soil to ensure that we go back to the basics where agriculture was part of the key strategic subjects at a particular time. So I'm saying we are going back there, and we are quite very, 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 very fine with that. We are working in the instance of making sure that there is a sustainable quality of products. Hence, I am happy that there is no food poisoning that is linked with school nutrition program in the context of the regulation and the policy, the procurement of food by schools. So that one is a watertight one. There is no way that schools can buy any food outside of that regulation, outside of the menu as stipulated in the province, and whatever that might cause. But what becomes a worrisome element for me is the circulation of uncredited food by bodies that should do that within the villages, within the communities that we are, and therefore put almost everybody at risk. Hence, I was saying, for me, yes, it might have transpired in schools, but it is a security threat, in my view, generally, not just for schools, but it's a security threat that needed to be dealt with once and for all, so that we can manage the environment that we are managing. The issue of kitchens, DTG Whitley has actually answered that question. We are embarking on that. We have got a sizable number of schools that are benefiting on that project that DBE has given us. And of course, we're coming from below the belt in terms of the backlogs in infrastructure in the province. So we do have a challenge on that one. But of course, we are coming okay in terms of the infrastructure performance now, but also in terms of the kitchen provided by those Massmart, Unilever, Tiger Brand, and also the program of the DPE. On infrastructure that gives us a leverage to get kitchens that are part of the infrastructure plan when we build new schools now, and when we hand them over in the context of the infrastructure development. Yes, I can agree, Chair, that it is one area that needed also a bit of a closer look in terms of health standards. Because if there are no standard kitchens, you run a risk of unhealthy food and unhealthy environment, and ultimately unnecessarily illnesses, which could put a strain in terms of the infrastructure of health that is not there that much. So we must guard against, we'll be proactive, guard against creating an environment that will create an overburdening of the infrastructure of health in the province, Chairperson. I would request Chairperson DTG and Mrs. Bula to come back if there is anything that probably I might have left out. I'm not so sure, Chair. Through your indulgence, I would want us to give them a bite if there is anything that probably we might have left unconsciously. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, MEC. And thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think the MEC has covered it all. But just to add that as a province, we have a feeding accuracy rate of 97% on any given day. We monitor the process closely because all our districts have got monitors. And we do cross-check our data using the MRR reports that the DG from National spoke to. So otherwise, the MEC has said it all. I cannot say much after him. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, thank you, Dr. Whittle, MEC, and the HOC, both provinces. Any follow-up members? Are we fine? Are we good?
We are fine and good, Chair.
We are fine and good, ne? All right. No, thank you very much for the responses that have been given by both provinces and the department on the school nutrition program. Let us safeguard our children, people. This thing of a food poisoning is getting serious now, and it's moving from one province to the other. You don't know whether it's a deliberated. It's a deliberate thing from who and why, but it is affecting our schools, and it is worrisome. I think we need MECs at your levels in provinces to really, be there for our children and try to be clearer that they must really watch where they are buying their food, because we've got serious problems. On that note, let us allow the department and provinces to leave the meeting, and then members can stay behind so that we adopt the minutes. Thank you very much. You can leave the meeting.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Okay, members, we've got minutes of the 24th of October. So the virtual meeting, we had a briefing from the department on the FS quarterly report 2023-2024 financial year. And then we have considered the minutes of the 26th September, 17th October and 18th October. Page 1 is the attendance of the members. Page 2, the DBE. Page 3 is our parliamentary staff. We have opened the meeting, and then the agenda was moved by Honorable Itzie and was seconded by Honorable Ngobo. And then we had an address by the Deputy Minister. We also had an address by the Director General. And the briefing was given by the department on their first quarterly report. And then we have considered the minutes of the 26th of September. They were moved by Honorable Adwans, seconded by Honorable Van der Walt. 17th October, they were moved by Honorable Adwans and seconded by Honorable Morwane. And then 18th October, they were moved by Honorable Morane and seconded by Honorable Adwans. And then the committee adjourned at 11:42 until today, the 31st of October. Any corrections? In the absence of corrections, can we adopt the minutes? Principal?
Modula Stool. Ke a tshepa o tang ko kwa ke gautse o tsena airport. Ke a move ore metsotsi e e fetiswe bjale ka e thaile letšatši le fetileo lona la maleba. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
And the Holy Spirit. Thank you very much, Chair. I follow in the footsteps of the only principal in Parliament, my father, the one and only, in seconding the minutes. Tango.
Thank you very much, Siyabonga family, for the proceedings of today. This then brings us to the end. It brings us to the end of the meeting. We are meeting next week, same time, same Zoom. We are going to be dealing with a petition from... There's a petition that we have received, so we are going to deal with that. Is what is Change Foundation. They are petitioning, I think, KZN Limpopo Eastern Cape on the Pitla Trends. Maybe it's not that those things, we don't know. All right.
Chairperson?
Principal?
I don't know. I stand to be corrected. We are the portfolio committee. And there's a lot of misrepresentation, which are actually damaging our image. I think you are supposed to advise us as to how should we respond to this. I just felt I must take privilege before you completely close the meeting. As on the Pella Bill, Chairperson, it's worrisome because misrepresentation by members of the portfolio committee on something which has been adopted by the same portfolio committee, I think it is criminal. How can you best advise us, sir? Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Principal. I think we have noted what is doing around the message circulations, both there on WhatsApp, about the Pella Bill and the misconceptions. From our side, probably we will just warn the public, because the reality also, they don't have a name. You don't know who wrote such things. And for what reasons? But my plea is that let's not lose focus, Principal.
Can I just say something? That I think the first thing, even before we say, we will try to demystify it. It is important that you make a strong and stench announcement here that people must desist, especially members of the portfolio committee, desist from misrepresenting the facts which were uttered or were agreed upon by the portfolio committee. Because actually, that is a violation of our code of ethics. If the portfolio committee has agreed, Chairperson, no member of the portfolio committee should go out and represent the resolution taken. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Principal Mabaka Tutuzane. Noted.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, members. Let's meet at Co House sitting. 2 o'clock. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair, and everyone. Let's meet in the City Hall tomorrow.